Hello, friends. This is Jim Cross, Chief Financial Officer of Village Missions, back with our second episode of Small Church and Ministry Finance Guide. We're discussing the fiduciary responsibility of the board and the elements of it. Fiduciary responsibility is a big phrase that simply describes the trust that board members are called to keep. You probably got started serving on a church board because you're a committed member of your church. If you're in a small ministry, maybe you have volunteered to serve in the program and you're passionate about the cause of the ministry. You may possess some administrative or technical skill that is needed, or maybe your primary qualification is simply that you are available. Availability is a valuable trait. You probably have a servant's heart and you're willing to serve wherever you are needed. So thank you. Availability is often the greatest ability. And we want to honor you by equipping you to fulfill your calling. As a board member, you can be exposed to personal liability under some circumstances. So it is important to be aware of the legal risks and responsibilities that your service entails, as well as the ways to minimize these risks. Properly addressed, the risks are easily managed and shouldn't normally discourage you from board service. So we're going to spend the next several episodes addressing these issues. The main source of personal liability stems from a failure to exercise this trust that you are called to keep. There are three main duties that are most commonly mentioned under a state's nonprofit corporation law. I'll summarize these and then we'll go into greater detail. They are the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and the duty of obedience. The duty of care requires directors to act in good faith and with the care an ordinarily prudent person would exercise in comparable circumstances. The duty of loyalty requires directors to act in the interest of the organization rather than in their own personal interest. The duty of obedience requires directors to adhere to the organization's mission, to follow the organization's governing documents, like the charter under which you were organized and the purpose which was originally stated, and also assure the ministry's compliance with any applicable laws. So let's dive in and understand how to apply the first duty, the duty of care. The duty of care starts with an understanding of the ministry's purpose and strategy and a working understanding of how the ministry carries out that strategy. The duty of care expects you to stay reasonably informed of the organization's activities so that when you come to a board meeting, you're ready to engage and provide direction and make sound decisions on behalf of the ministry. This type of care is described as the competence expected of a board member and is commonly expressed as the care that an ordinarily prudent person would exercise in a like position and under similar circumstances. So you may not make a perfect decision, and time may reveal that it wasn't the best decision, but you want to be able to say that we as a board were prudent, that we acted in good faith based on the best information available at the time. You want to be able to say that you conducted the board's business with the same care and attention that you give to your personal affairs. So exercising your duty of care is dependent on several things: having good information, preparing in advance, and participating actively in the board's business. To be effective in meetings, the board should have reports well in advance so that you can read them, consider what the staff is communicating to you, and note any questions you may have so that you're ready to participate actively. What reports should you be looking at? Well, reporting should be based on your stated goals. You have a strategy that grows out of the implementation of your purpose or mission statement. And as you carry out your strategy, you develop targets or goals to help you determine whether your strategy is successful. So when you meet as a board, your director will report on activity and progress toward goals. you should decide on a set of key performance indicators that you will measure over time to determine the trends and direction of your ministry. What you decide to measure will look different in every ministry, but there is some reporting that should be the same regardless of your program focus. That is the financial reporting, because we are the Small Church and Ministry Finance Guide. Every board needs to get regular financial statements that are complete enough for you to gain assurance that the financial resources are being used in a reasonable, appropriate way, consistent with board policy and authorized budgets. We have a board member at Village Missions. His name is Glenn Damon. And Glenn likes to ask me at every meeting, Jim, are all the bills paid? And Jim, we have money in the bank? If I can answer yes, that's good enough for Glenn. Now, of course, there's more to it than that. And not every board member is gifted in financial administration. That's okay. That's why board members have different gifts and complement one another. Glenn's gifts are in some other very important areas. In fact, Glenn Damon is an accomplished authority on rural ministry. He's a prolific author and has generously made many of his resources available at ruralministry.net. If you want to dive into the theology of church leadership, Glenn has an excellent series of video teaching at ruralministry.net. I will link it in the notes below, and I encourage you to go check it out. So what financial reports should you be receiving? This depends on your size, but regardless, you should be able to see the activity for the period and know your cash position. So if you're a small church with just a checking account, this may mean a copy of the check register. It could really be that simple. Most churches and ministries will have some accounting software that can generate an income statement and a balance sheet, and you should see both every month. The income statement should show you year-to-date totals with a comparison to last year, as well as a comparison to budget. I like to see a comparison to the annual budget. This is helpful if your spending does not occur evenly throughout the year and you can see how much you have left. The balance sheet should show the major categories of assets and liabilities and your net asset position. The reports should show enough detail for you to understand what you own and what you owe, what you've earned and what you've spent, but not so much that you're overwhelmed with detail. It may take some give and take with your staff to get a report that is useful for your board. You may also have special projects or initiatives that you'd like to see more detail on. Anticipate those needs. Work ahead with your bookkeeper or your staff to build a report that gives you the information that you need. All board members should receive the reports that I've just mentioned, but there are other reports that the treasurer, the finance committee, or similar group should be reviewing. Someone who is independent needs to be reviewing the bank statement, the bank reconciliation, credit card statements, and payroll journals. Larger organizations with bigger staffs can achieve sufficient internal control without involving the board in the daily details. But smaller organizations need to have the board involved. It's important, especially in a small organization, for the board to participate in the internal control process. Now, the cheapest and easiest way to implement internal control right now is to have the bank statement mailed to an independent board member. Having someone who is not involved in the spending of money or the signing of checks, to have that person review the bank statement is the number one thing that every small organization should be doing. Credit card statements also. Have them mailed to an independent board member who can open them independently, look them over, and be free to pick up the phone and call the director or call the staff member and just ask questions about things that are unusual or unclear. According to Tiffany Couch, a CPA and certified fraud examiner based in Vancouver, Washington, 78% of all fraud is due to fraudulent disbursements. So where will you find fraudulent disbursements? You'll find them on the bank statement. You'll find them by reviewing canceled checks and credit card statements. You must review hard copies of those statements every month. Tiffany emphasizes the value of hard copy, and I agree. I personally know how tedious it is to click through bank websites to look at check images. It is much simpler for a board member to scan over a few pages and then be done. You also want to review payroll reports. Take a look at both the detail of the payroll register and the check register or the direct deposit register. Scan the names to make sure they're all authorized employees. Scan the hours worked and the salary dollars to make sure they look reasonable. Is anyone working overtime? That's a budget leak that you might want to ask about. Maybe you have some staffing issues to address. The gross pay year-to-date on the report should tie into the wages line on your income statement. That's another good check to make sure that everything's making it onto the financial statements. I want to recommend Tiffany Couch's resources to you. She has an excellent website called StopNonprofitFraud.com. She offers a course for board members that is only $99, and it is totally worth it. In a series of videos, Tiffany takes you through some of the hard lessons learned by her clients. She teaches you how to read financial statements, how to read bank statements, and much more. The link is StopNonprofitFraud.com. So we've looked at duty of care and how to apply it to our fiduciary role, overseeing finances in particular. We've learned that exercising your duty of care means being able to say that we were prudent, that we acted in good faith based on the best information available at the time. You want to be able to say that you conducted the board's business with the same care and attention that you give to your personal affairs. We've learned that exercising your duty of care is dependent on having good information, preparing in advance, and actively participating in the board's business. In our next episodes, we'll cover duty of loyalty and duty of obedience. So thank you for being with us. In closing, I just want to encourage you, friend, if you are a pastor looking for a great support network or a rural church looking for proven leadership, I encourage you to learn more about Village Missions at villagemissions.org. If you're a small ministry looking for proven accountability among peers who understand your issues, I encourage you to look at Association of North American Missions. You'll find them at anamissions.org. Thank you for listening, and we will meet again on the next episode.